Look out, Pope Happy. Team Trump sets up to defend traditional Catholics from Joe Biden's formerly weaponized FBI. Plus, the President of the United States pays a visit to the maitre d' of the White House? What's going on here? Is Trump serious about occupying Gaza? Rand Paul sure hopes not. By the way, if it's anti-Semitic to criticize Netanyahu's war for Greater Israel, why are these guys comparing Bibi's regime to Nazi Germany? From the What the Heck file, why did Trump have a 3-hour dinner with this clown? Tonight, Israel and the plot to cancel Donald Trump. Hello again, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Mathis. This is the Remnant Underground. Before we get started, please do not forget to like and share this video wherever you're watching us, whether it's on remnant-tv.com, where all of our videos go up first, of course, or over at YouTube, Spotify, Rumble, whatever. It really, really helps, and I appreciate it. Also, if you have not subscribed now to the oldest traditional Catholic newspaper in the world, the paper of record for the traditional Catholic movement, please do so. We come out every 2 weeks. You can click that link right down here below and join the Remnant Resistance today. I appreciate it. So, here we go. Everyone is talking about this Donald Trump's bromance, if you will, with Bibi Netanyahu. Now, I'm going to talk about this. As we said last time, ever since the election, when Trump does something good, we're all in it. We're all on it. When he does something problematic or questionable, there's going to be no fanboy. There's going to be no lionizing. There's going to be no never Trumping on this show. Equal opportunity, exactly. So I want to talk about this, but really I want to talk about the situation in Israel, which for many people is a taboo topic. You're not supposed to talk about this. You might be accused of anti-Semitism or whatever if you kind of ask a few questions. And I find this kind of interesting because, I mean, this is an apocalyptic conspiracy. I was going to say it's a conspiracy theory, but it's not a conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy. It's true. It's happening. You know, lots of folks on our side don't want to talk about it. As I say, they're, you know, quick to talk about things like chemtrails in the sky and fake moon landings and UFOs and who shot JFK. But people stay away from this one for some reason, this really not so secret and long-standing pact that the United States has with Israel. I mean, right now, I think we've got to be in the high percentages, 70-80% of the government are Zionist. Whether they're Jewish Zionists or Christian Zionists,
everyone in power
is there or extremely sympathetic to it. This seems to me is something that we can we can and should be talking about, a fairly significant conspiracy theory, if you will. And it's having an impact right now on Trump, on his administration. That's what I want to talk about. I'm not sure why he did this, what he did this past week, which we're going to show here in a moment. Because he was really off to the races. He had a very smooth opening statement. He opened up with a flurry of executive orders that left most of us, most conservatives, smiling ear to ear. And then, all of a sudden, he drops this.
As far as Gaza is concerned, we'll do what is necessary. If it's necessary, we'll do that. We're going to take over that piece. We're going to develop it, create thousands and thousands of jobs. And it'll be something that the entire Middle East can be very proud of.
Waleed, your thoughts on this? He also said Palestinian refugees could relocate to numerous sites or one large site, but shouldn't stay in Gaza. Is this a serious proposal or a pitch to get talks started?
No, Raymond. I mean, Raymond's chuckling like everybody else. What the heck did we just see? I think it is, Raymond. I think he's serious. I know guys like Bannon talk about flooding the zone, and Trump comes out and says these outrageous things to distract the folks on the left for, you know, the real agenda. Not sure that's what this is, not in this case. I think buying Canada might have been.
What for?
Kind of a troll. I'm not sure what that was about, but that was pretty funny. This is something different, and the reason I say that is because they've been talking about this for a long time. Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who is Jewish, was talking about this a long time ago. In fact, we were covering it down here in the underground several months ago. Not another Afghanistan nightmare for nothing, for no reason, because some idiot neocon wanted to go blow up the world.
Jared Kushner is a longtime family friend of Benjamin Netanyahu. The Kushner family, like the Trump family, are in the real estate business, and the Kushners have been doing business in Israel for years. Earlier this year, Jared spoke of Gaza's valuable waterfront property.
I'm not sure there's much left of Gaza at this point. In Gaza's waterfront property, it could be very valuable. It's a little bit of an unfortunate situation there, but I think from Israel's perspective, I would do my best to move the people out and then clean it up. I think proactively recognizing a Palestinian state would essentially be rewarding an act of terror that was perpetrated into Israel. So it's a super bad idea in that regard.
I don't understand why they don't recognize, again, the terrible optics of this. Whatever you think happened, whether you think every other Palestinian is a Hamas terrorist or not, a lot of people are dead. A lot of people lost their homes. They lost their wives. They lost their mothers. They lost their sons and daughters there. It is their homeland, right? Mm-hmm. And to come in and say you're gonna erect a set of Trump Towers and casinos and I don't understand.
Is anybody going to want to go there?
Yeah, exactly. Who's going to want to go there? And why does this not look make him look really bad? I mean, eventually, I think they're going to take Trump.
The worst reason,
right,
to go kick a bunch of people off there,
right? Because you want to put up casinos and condominiums. And I really do fear that this has happened in the past, where the deep state, if you will, has set some puppet up so that he can kind of eventually, ultimately, be used to take down an entire movement, right? And if they decide, for example, because this is going this way, the whole world, other than the United States and Israel, is looking at the situation in Gaza and going, this is wrong. This is a war crime. Even the United Nations, and I have no time for the United Nations, but they're not exactly known for anti-Semitism now, are they? And even the UN is talking about the war crime, the genocide, the ethnic cleansing. If, for example, this continues and Trump ends up holding the coats for Netanyahu's gang, and then this is spun into sort of another Holocaust of the Palestinians, guess who's going to go down hard? Guess who's going to be like the Hitler of the future? It's going to be Donald Trump. So that's why I want to talk about this. If you like Trump, you like the opening guns here, you like these executive orders against wokeism and all of that stuff, we need to look at this really carefully, because someone could be using it, could be supplying Trump with enough rope to hang himself, and that's what I want to really concentrate on, you know? Because now you're seeing, under clips like this, screaming headlines from U.S. president to Israel's waiter, as we see Donald Trump helping Bibi with his chair. Very uncharacteristic, very cringeworthy, and yeah, that's what's going on. And then, as Walter pointed out before the show, Netanyahu gives Trump a golden pager? A pager? Who uses pagers anymore? So why is that? What is that symbolic of? That Trump's going to basically be on call, he's going to be wearing a little gold pager so that he can be at Bibi's beck and call? It's this little, I mean, that's insane. What is happening? So no wonder now, when all this happens so fast, again, why right now? Why so quickly? This is crazy. This is like a major policy decision. Somebody's advising Trump to do this, and it's causing people on the left, yes, to go after him, give them something to really go after. But more importantly, folks on the right, even former military advisors, freaking out over what Trump said.
I was surprised, first of all, and I'm sure you were as well, at the callous disregard for human life that the suggestion represents, that somehow or another, mystically, magically, we're going to remove over a million human beings. We're going to erase the place where they are from and their country, their heritage, and establish this thing. Like you, I thought it was incredible. If anything, I think Netanyahu is practicing American foreign policy through ventriloquy. He's simply moving Trump's mouth, and Trump is saying what he wants him to say. And that is, unfortunately, tragically, the perception in the United States, that Trump is not a free actor, that he is simply a puppet, and the puppet master is Netanyahu.
Now, before you get all worked up about Israel, defending Israel, I'm going to do what I always do on this show. I'm going to, as much as possible, rely on Jewish witnesses, Jewish experts, folks who are on the ground in Israel to present my evidence. So before you get all defensive of Israel, I would remind you that the Jewish people now, are crying out against this regime almost more than anyone else.
Between the River Jordan and the Mediterranean, that is all over historical Palestine, only one nation can exist, the Jewish nation. No other nation. And not only that, this law says that in order to assert the Jewish identity of the a land of Israel, Eretz Israel, you need to continue to colonize, to settle, and to reject anyone who is not a Jew, who does not accept that all of historical Palestine is a Jewish state. That is the essence of Zionism.
So, my friends, this is going to have geopolitical ramifications. And no, I'm not overlooking some of the good things that happened, like the pardon for Joan Andrews Bell, the pro-life hero. But we have to be aware of the fact that as good as that was to see coming from the Trump administration, that was sort of a no skin off my teeth type of thing. It really, really fired up his base in a good way. But this is something different. This thing with Israel is something, and Gaza is something very different. It has geopolitical ramifications, as I say. It's bigger than anything else Trump has done on the domestic front so far, most of which, and I stress this, most of which has been really great. I mean, for example, it was really great to see Trump pardon those pro-lifers, pardon those January 6ers. But if he hadn't done that, he would have lost his base right out of the gate, right? But it was still great to see. It was great to see, from a personal point of view, that maybe the new FBI director is going to at least pause this insane witch hunt against traditional Catholics.
Mr. Patel, are you familiar with the recent actions of the FBI in this regard, including this memo that I have right here, making a list of Catholic churches and parishes that they regard as potentially suspect and directing the potential recruitment of informants and other spies, let's be honest, into those parishes?
I'm familiar with that memo, Senator.
Mr. Patel, would you commit to me that you will, if you are confirmed, that you will finally and officially withdraw this memo and make it clear that this is not only unacceptable, but that it is an absolute violation of the First Amendment that every American enjoys under the Constitution of the United States?
If I'm confirmed, Senator, yes.
Still, as good as all of this is to see, I repeat, Trump's Israel First policy, I believe, is truly a disaster for everybody, including Trump, you know? And Jewish people, those of you who are going to jump now and talk about anti-Semitism, and it's anti-Semitic to question Netanyahu, right? Remember this, I'll show you here a little clip. Jewish organizations, powerful Jewish organizations, are actually putting together high-quality documentaries trying to get the word out on what they think of the criminal regime in Israel.
They occupy our name, our identity.
I was still very much loyal to the Zionist ideology.
Those symbols mean something to me. That Star of David, that is on the menorah, that is in our religion of thousands of years.
You say God promised land, you said the Torah. You don't believe in the Torah.
I already warned that Israel would become far more extreme, far more closer to an apartheid state.
I came home and I told my husband, we have to get out of here. Israel is complete mania.
We call it in political science failed state. This is really a collapse of a state.
So Walter will put a link to that documentary down here. I encourage you to watch the entire thing. It's amazing. And again, if you're still going to go back to your talking points, your Sean Hannity talking points, that it's merely anti-Semitism that is driving this opposition to what's going on, you got to listen to what the Jews are saying. You got to watch a documentary like that. You got to stop it. You got to start opening your eyes, pulling your head out of the sand, and looking at the reality of what's going on here. Because it's not just Jews, it's not just people on college campuses, it's conservatives, it's people who were among the biggest backers, the most powerful conservative backers of Donald Trump. They're very concerned with what Bibi Netanyahu and company, what they're doing over there.
If you're intentionally killing civilians, you probably shouldn't beat your chest and brag about it. You know, maybe you can make the
case. I agree
with
that.
Maybe you make the case that we had to do it or whatever, but you should.
I agree.
You should weep, and that's evil, and you should just say it's evil. And I know it's really, really threatening to.
Is it evil?
Ben Shapiro to say that or whatever.
But is it evil?
To kill civilians on purpose? Yeah, it is. I think it is.
Really?
Kids and children? Well, how is it not?
Oh, absolutely. And again, we're going to talk. I keep talking about doing a full show on the decline of Christian morality in politics in general. But that's what Tucker's talking about there. He's not a Catholic, but he's a Christian. And he's talking about Christian morality. And Christian morality dictates what is right and wrong within the confines of war. And killing women and children indefinitely, indiscriminately, is evil. He's right. But you know what his critics are going to say, Tucker's critics, and critics of mine, critics of this show. You know what they're going to say? What they've been saying ever since October 7th, 2023. Yeah, but Hamas is a terrorist group. And so killing women and children is necessary, you see, because Hamas is using these women and children as human shields. No, that doesn't work. That's not right. That does not justify this. You know, if you can't root out Hamas terrorists without killing 40,000 and counting innocent women and children, then guess what? You need to find another way to root out Hamas. That's what you need to do. You don't get to just keep killing kids for over a year. That's not the way it works. This is the behavior, in fact, of a terrorist regime, at least according to Jews who are living in Israel.
When I was growing up, and now the Palestinians are compared to Nazis, they're not seen as human beings at all. When you find out that your group is doing really bad things, and you realize that it's really actually very, very unwell, immoral, it's killing people, it's basically a genocidal.
Okay, so when you look at that, and I know what the critics, what the next objection is going to be, yeah, but Hamas, the Hamas guys are hiding under the hospitals, they're hiding under the schools, and they're all terrorists. Really? Because Donald Trump doesn't seem to agree with you on that one. He doesn't seem to think so. In fact, Donald Trump wants to relocate over 2 million of these Hamas terrorists then.
If we can get a beautiful area to resettle people permanently in nice homes and where they can be happy and not be shot, not be killed, not be knifed to death like what's happening in Gaza, why would they want to return? The place has been hell.
Whoopsie! Guess what that is? That's the cat out of the bag. If he could separate the terrorists, the Hamas terrorists, from the innocent women and children in order to relocate them and give them nice homes where they'll be more lucky in the future, obviously, friends, Benjamin Netanyahu's team could have done the exact same thing without slaughtering 40,000 women and children. You simply can't have it both ways. Now what do you say? Well, yeah, but Israel has a right to defend itself. You know what, friends? I'm done with that one. I'm done. I'm not going to dignify that stupid Sean Hannity talking point anymore by even refuting it. It's ridiculous. So let's just let the Jews on the ground respond to that particular bit of absurdity.
Israel was never ready to accept the Palestinians as they are. Israel never acknowledged the crimes of the Nakba, of the expulsion of Palestinians, and there is an unwillingness within Zionism to meaningfully challenge that extremism. There is an attempt, especially on the outside, to portray Zionism as something that should be beyond questioning even, something so obvious and benevolent. Jewish people have a right to self-determination. How could one in any way challenge this? The question of why are you conducting war crimes against a Palestinian civilian population within a broader context of what is legally a regime of apartheid as designated by not only human rights groups inside Israel, not only international human rights groups, but also now the International Court of Justice. Would you rather have that conversation? Or why are you singling me out because I'm a Jewish state, you must be anti-Semitic? You're just like the Nazis.
Friends, at some point, those of you who are still dragging your feet on this, at some point, you're just gonna have to accept the fact that not only now, not only since October of 2023, but for years before, Israel has been on offense.
אנחנו הולמים באויבינו בעוצמה חסרת תקדים. אני מדגיש, זאת רק ההתחלה. They've made a mistake of historic proportions. We will exact a price that will be remembered by them and Israel's other enemies for decades to come.
Yeah, Donald Trump, one of the first things he did after being sworn in, was to send his buddy Netanyahu a whole cache of 2,000-pound bunker buster bombs.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu thanked Trump for lifting the hold on the one-ton bombs.
Thank you, President Trump, for keeping your promise to give Israel the tools it needs to defend itself.
Don't you just want to know what's going on here? Wouldn't it be fun to ask a few questions? I'm sorry, but what the hell is going on? What does this have to do with Make America Great Again? This guy, Bibi, he's on offense. Okay? He's not on defense. He's preparing the way, by the way, according to some prominent rabbis. It's Bibi who's preparing the way for the Messiah.
40 years ago, when Netanyahu was Israel's ambassador to the United Nations, he met Menachem Mendel Schneerson, the leader of the Chabad-Lubavitch movement, known simply as the Rebbe. The Rebbe reportedly believed Netanyahu had a mission from God to prepare Israel for the coming of the Messiah, or in Hebrew, the Moshiach. Over the next decade, the two men developed a close relationship.
So as Christianity worldwide comes under massive attack, the most persecuted group, Christians, most persecuted group in the world, dying all over the place, right? Do you think it's a little strange that all of a sudden Israel's rising up out of the sea? Isn't that kind of strange at this particular time? And I know, again, what the critics of this show are going to say, because you basically have had the same talking points ever since October 7th of 2023. So your last one is biblical. Your last one is, well, yeah, but I mean, these guys are God's chosen people, okay? The Holy Land was promised to them by God. Read your Genesis, man. I hear this from traditional Catholics who actually say this. That's the extent to which we have now lost our Catholic identity. They're actually saying, well, let's go back 6,000 years or so and let the Word of God draw the maps of the world.
The whole rest of the world is saying, what is going on? Endless war in the Middle East. Well, this is because we're defending someone with some 7th century BC vision of what they want their country to be.
Are you serious? Because there's one little problem with this. According to Orthodox Jews on the ground, Zionists do not believe in the Torah. Zionists do not believe even in God.
The founder of Zionists, his name was Ted Herzl from Vienna, Austria. He don't believe in God. He don't believe in nothing. The Judaism is completely a religious movement, have nothing to do with any nationality, with any materialistic things. The Zionist often waving the flag of the promised land, the promised land. You say God promised land, you said the Torah. You don't believe in the Torah, you don't believe in God, you don't eat kosher. How can he be such a strong hypocrite to take out of the Torah something what is for his benefit in ignoring all the other parts? It's written the Ten Commandments, don't kill, don't steal. The Zionist ignoring everything about the Jewish belief. In the Jewish belief, the state of Israel will come to an end 100%.
So if I agree with that fellow, am I an anti-Semite still? So I'm sorry, Mike. I'm sorry, Ambassador Mike Huckabee. But Christian Zionism is a ridiculous heresy. It's actually older than Jewish Zionism. And yet the Christian Zionists, basing themselves on this ridiculous Scofield Bible and all the heresies contained therein, the Christian Zionists are the ones who are dominating the Trump administration right now.
There is no such thing as a West Bank. It's Judea and Samaria. There's no such thing as a settlement. They're communities, they're neighborhoods, they're cities. There's no such thing as an occupation.
This is the man President Trump has nominated as the U.S. ambassador to Israel. Evangelical Christian Mike Huckabee is a staunch supporter of Israel and Zionism. He has suggested that Palestinians could relocate to other countries, implying that there's plenty of land for them in nations such as Jordan, Egypt, and Syria. but according to Trump, this is the man who will bring peace to the Middle East.
So, do you still think that Trump was just flooding the zone? No, I think he's dead serious. This has been the plan from the start. This is what the Christian Zionists are coming to Trump, and they are now demanding they get paid back for the support and the money that they gave Trump to win the White House, right? They're dead serious. Mike Huckabee just laid it right out. Get him out of there. Put him in Egypt. Put him in the same countries, even, that Trump was talking about at the press conference with Bibi a couple days ago. According to Mike Huckabee, you know, it's anti-Semitic to question any of this.
And I think that Gaza is scheduled for extinction. So is the so-called West Bank. All you have to do is listen to these people. There's no news there. The Pegasus revelation is disturbing, but not surprising, given the people currently interested in going after anyone anywhere in the world who is construed as an anti-Semite. And of course, that term is used effectively against anybody that doesn't want to unconditionally support Israel.
And yet, again, you critics of this show are going to say, well, you know, God's chosen people. This is all good. This is all conservative. Where's my elephant lapel sticker? I got to get my Sacred Heart off here and get an elephant down there because this is God's holy will, you know? And for those people, I'm sorry to say, they just will buy anything. Pius XII was responsible for the Holocaust too, right? Jeffrey Epstein killed himself. COVID came from bats. And Pope St. Pius X, well, he was an anti-Semite. The greatest pope of the 20th century, a canonized saint, Pope Pius X. Well, he had to be an anti-Semite, right? Because back on January 26, 1904, Theodore Herzl, who's the father of Zionism, we just talked about him, doesn't believe in God, according to Orthodox Jews. Anyway, he's the father of Zionism. Now, he was given an audience. He was granted an audience with Pope St. Pius X back in 1906 in the Vatican. So the Pope was obviously open to conversations and dialogue with this guy early on, right? And Herzl goes and he asks the Pope, we've covered this a little bit, but I think it's really important to kind of flesh it out a little more. Theodore Herzl goes to the Pope, to Pius X, and he begs support. He asks support for the Zionist vision, the Zionist dream to establish a Jewish state in Palestine. Now, according to Herzl's own published diary, the account of this meeting, Pope St. Pius X responds to him. He says, as I am the head of the Catholic Church, I cannot do this. The Jewish religion, this is the important part, those of you who want to go back 7,000 years to have God design the maps for the world in the 2025, okay? St. Pius X says the Jewish religion was the foundation of our Catholic religion, our Christian religion, but it was superseded by the teachings of Jesus Christ, and we cannot concede any further validity to it. You see? That's what a Catholic believes, old law versus new law. The veil of the temple was rent, was ripped in half, right? When the old law was fulfilled, the old covenant was abolished. This is the issue here. But Herzl, Theodore Herzl, standing in front of Pope Pius X, he persists. He says, does your holiness know the situation of the Jews? Pius replies, yes, from my Mantua days. Jews live there, and I have always been on good terms with Jews. After all, there are other bonds than those of religion, courtesy, philanthropy, for example. These we do not deny to the Jews. And if you come to Palestine and settle your people there, says Pope St. Pius X, we shall have churches and priests ready to baptize all of you. You see, that's how lovingly the church, the pre-conciliar church, used to speak to those who were not Christian, who were not Catholic. Pope Pius X, Saint Pius X, thought he so loved the Jews that he spoke clearly to them. That's what we don't have today, right? You got subterfuge, you got ecumenical BS dialogue, nobody knows what the heck the church stands for. In those days, everyone knew. Theodore Herzl is not, if you read his diary, he's not offended by Pius X, he expects this. He's the head of the Catholic Church, of course he believes this, right? And Pius is speaking man to man to this Zionist Jewish man, and he tells him the truth. And then he welcomes him, welcomes all the Jews with open arms into his own church. Right? You wouldn't do that if you had had an immoral hatred, blood hatred of Jews. No, he says, you can come into the church anytime. We'll baptize all of you. You're more than welcome. In fact, Eugenio Zoli, the rabbi of Rome during World War II changed his name to Eugenio. He named, becomes a Christian, becomes a convert. You know this story. Because of the example set by Pope Pius XII, the successor of Pope Pius X by two. Pope Pius XII was such an exemplary Christian that the rabbi during World War II converts. It's a story we're not supposed to tell anybody, though, because it kind of disrupts the narrative, doesn't it? So Pius X says, no, we cannot support the state of Israel in the land that Jesus himself made holy. It's already the Holy Land. It's the land where Jesus lived. So we can't support Israel. Just as, by the way, many Orthodox Jews today do not support Israel.
Every time among Muslims, I never see any anti-Semitism at all. Just look, from the Jewish point of view, where is the most dangerous place for a Jew to live today? You go the whole world, you come to one point, state of Israel.
The question of what will happen in this land and whether, not a theory of Zionism that I was brought up with, but the practice of the state of Israel and the state ideology is called Zionism. And the reality there is a reality that is not enabling of an existence which is going to work, of course, not for Palestinians, but also for Jews. And I feel now that this is coming apart. And therefore, you see that some of the most vociferous, determined, angry voices in this period have been the voices of Jewish people saying, not in my name.
Seems like every week now, another Jewish voice speaks out in protest. This week, it's Wallace Shawn, the Jewish actor from, I guess, most well-known from The Princess Bride. And he took it up a notch. Here's what he says.
I mean, the Israelis invaded somebody else's territory. They took people's homes, and they did many of the things that the Nazis did to the Jews, and now they're really doing it. You can't be more evil than what they're doing. They are doing evil that is just as great as what the Nazis did, and in some ways it's worse because they kind of boast about it. Hitler had the decency to try to keep it secret. For some reason, Hitler didn't want people to know he was doing these things to the Jews. The Israelis are almost proud of it, and it's demonically evil. It is. Yeah. It's, you can't be more evil. And anybody who doesn't recognize that it's evil, I can't probably communicate with that person. I don't know how that might be temporary insanity.
You know what it is, of course. It's inconceivable. It's inconceivable. But that's where we're at, friends. That's what they, again, Jews speaking out. And now Donald Trump, in the middle of all this, has taken the United States of America from funding this genocide in Gaza, which Jewish voices are calling evil and worse than what the Nazis did on some level. He's taking it from there to actively, he's promising at least, to actively participate in the genocide and then to occupy Gaza. Why? Who's forcing this? How does this again, how does this make America great again? What's going on? I completely agree with Rand Paul, who tweeted out a couple days ago, I thought we voted for America first. We have no business contemplating yet another occupation to doom our treasure and spill our soldiers' blood. Yes, Rand Paul, please continue to speak out like that. You know, these people have lost everything. Again, they've lost their homes, their loved ones, and Donald Trump wants to turn their land into the Riviera of the Middle East.
It's not a decision made lightly. Everybody I've spoken to loves the idea of the United States owning that piece of land, developing and creating thousands of jobs with something that will be magnificent. And I don't want to be cute. I don't want to be a wise guy. But the Riviera of the Middle East, this could be something that could be so bad. This could be so magnificent.
And everybody, you know, seems to be being more or less pushed into this, forced to get on, get with the program, to get on board. Even the new FBI guy, who's got a lot of great things to say, even he's out there and has been for some time saying that we need to make Israel our first priority.
We need America to wake up and prioritize Israel.
And it's going to get worse, apparently, now. I like Pete Hegseg. He's like a nice enough guy. He seems kind of like a kid to me, but whatever. He's got some good things to say about wokeism in the military. All for it. But then he wants to go rebuild the temple.
2017, the declaration of Jerusalem as the capital was a miracle. And there's no reason why the miracle of the reestablishment of the temple on the Temple Mount is not possible.
And they call us rigid fundamentalists as traditional Catholics. What are these guys doing? What are they talking about? Pete Hegseg sat across from Bibi yesterday and bragged about how he intends to emulate the neocon war machine of Israel.
You have a long memory. We have a long memory. And may our relationship continue to endure. We're going to continue to grow our defense industrial base. We've supplied munitions that were previously not supplied, that are useful in eradicating radical enemies, and we are committed to continuing to do so. So I hope you've noticed here at the Defense Department under President Trump, we are laser focused on reviving the warrior ethos, on rebuilding America's military, and reestablishing deterrence, which is something you, Prime Minister, have done in your neighborhood in impressive, aggressive, and important ways.
God help us, friends. And they're just getting started.
This is not stopping with Gaza. The Israeli army is leveling buildings and killing Palestinians on the West Bank as we speak. And I am convinced that this is like the jump up into Lebanon, and then you're into Syria, then you're killing more people in Gaza, and then where do you go next?
We've already given Bibi $1 billion to complete this work, which Jeff Sachs, another Jew, says is for the establishment of greater Israel in the Mideast.
This greater Israel idea says we can't make peace with the Palestinians, so anyone that supports the Palestinians is, by definition, a mortal threat to us. And when you have a mortal threat, you must destroy it. And so this is the opposite of diplomacy. It's war. And as Netanyahu crowed last week, it's war to remake the Middle East.
Friends, if you like Trump's domestic policy, as I do, well, you better speak up right now before whoever these people are, whoever the real deep state folks are. I don't think any of us have any idea for sure who's behind this. But before they give him just enough rope to hang himself with, right? Because don't forget, they did it once before, didn't they? When Trump, for whatever reason, let Fauci and the insufferable Bill Gates drive his first term right into the ground. Speaking of Gates.
Have you met Donald Trump since the election?
Yeah, I had a chance to go have a long and actually quite intriguing dinner with him.
What did you discuss? What was intriguing?
Well, we touched on a lot of things. It was over 3 hours. I spoke a lot about HIV and that the foundation's literally working on a cure for that. We're at an early stage. And so, you know, he, in the COVID days, accelerated the vaccine innovation. So I, you know, was asking him if maybe the same kind of thing could be done here. And we both got, I think, pretty excited about that.
And we played that last week, but I wanted to play a little bit more of it because it's starting to really bother me. I can't figure this out. Trump, in his first few days in office, after everything that criminal Gates did to all of us, to our children, to our world, Trump gives this clown a 3-hour meal 1 week back in office? After the Epstein scandal and everything else, when even his own wife, Gates, his own wife finally had to leave this clown? Why? Why would Trump do this? Is he going to come out now and support Gavi again and get all started up with the vax thing as well? Friends, I don't know what's going on, but I'm just telling you, you need to stay awake. We need to pay attention and stay awake. Yes, we're happy that he's freeing the J6ers and pardoning the pro-lifers and all those things. But as I said before, compared to this, Those are kind of no skin off Donald Trump's teeth. He had to do that, right? What is this? What's happening? Why does he have to do this? Why does he have to go to dinner with Bill Gates and listen to him yammer on for 3 hours about how he's going to vax up the whole world? And I'm speaking right now because I think there maybe there's some hope. There's a ton of pushback going on right now. In fact, right after all this happened with Bibi, Trump comes out with another executive order defending, you know, Christians from anti-Christian bias in this country, a great executive order. I hope it's more than just a piece of paper. But I did sense that Trump was immediately, okay, we got to do something for the Christians now, because there's huge pushback, as there was with the pro-lifers, which caused him and Vance to come onto the mall for the pro-life Right to Life March, right? So I don't think all is lost. I think we need to speak up clearly, forcefully, make the demands, especially if you voted for him, especially if you donated to his campaign, right? And we're all praying for the best under Donald Trump's administration, of course. And no, I don't blame, we're talking about Christian morality, I don't blame poor Donald Trump for failing in every single case to strictly implement Christian moral principles every step of the way, right? Especially not when the world's moral authority, this guy, is in Davos skiing with the devil or whatever he's doing. I mean, that's the problem. This is the problem, which I've said so many times. The fixing of this problem has to come first before we can make too many demands on politicians in states that are increasingly secular, right? This is the problem, you know? And thank God, a lot of people in very high places in the church are seeing it, as we've been talking about so many people, cardinals, bishops, priests in the church. And the latest, of course, is this Dutch Bishop Robert Mussertz, who took to his blog a few weeks ago and just blasted the Vatican and Pope Francis for focusing on what? For focusing on climate change and social justice rather than the salvation of souls, which is their job, you see? So the bishop said that this negative trend, he actually admitted this, a negative trend of social, the church is becoming like life coach and social uplift and climate enthusiasts, right? He said this negative trend has dominated the Catholic Church since, wait for it, the Second Vatican Council. Now we're getting somewhere. Now we're getting somewhere. And the bishop goes on, he says, how did it get to the point where we see rainbow flags and LGBTQRBS activists dancing around the altar? Sermons that are expressions of political correctness more than anything else. How do we get to this point? And he says, I see a hunger for tradition and transcendence in young Catholics. I see them wanting the Latin Mass, he says. But Rome is preoccupied with the new buzzword, synodality. Thank you. Exactly, Your Excellency. God bless you. Right? Because His Excellency is basically saying what we all know. And again, which is foundational to this show, to the point and purpose of why we do this underground, that when politicians out there in secular states now, when they have no serious Christian moral authority to answer to anymore, all hell breaks loose. And this kind of thing becomes commonplace.
We walk up to him and he's sitting and Don Jr. introduces me and he says, Dad, this is Dave Rubin. He has a great podcast, you know, blah, blah, blah. And Trump looks up and he's like, you, I kind of recognize you. And I was like, oh, well, you know, I go on Fox, I'm on Tucker. He said, oh, Tucker, that must be. Yeah. And then he turns to you and he goes, and who are you?
Who are you? Because I'm just standing there. Yeah. Like, I don't know. You know.
He goes, who are you? And you go, well, I'm his husband. And he goes, husband? Husband?
You two are married?
You two are married? And then he slaps his hands on the table.
Yeah.
And he goes, I want to stand up. I want to stand up and shake your hands. I think that's great.
Turns to Melania. He's like, honey, these two guys are married. And he turns to me, he's like, you guys are too good looking. That's your problem. You're too good looking.
Yeah, ooh, right? But don't forget, that was shot, that particular clip was shot probably 10 years, nearly 10 years, after the Holy Father asked CNN to bring in their cameras and record him kissing a gay couple. We've used this a lot, but don't ever forget that a lot of this stuff started right here when the world saw this. Yes. 10 years after that, Francis comes out and says he wants priests and bishops of the Catholic Church to be blessing gay couples. Not marriage, of course, just blessing the gay people, the couples that want blessings, because, yeah, everybody can make those fine distinctions in this dumbed-down world of ours, right? So this, friends, is the reality And it's a pretty harsh reality that we all face now. And that, again, fundamentally, that's the problem. There is no moral voice in the world anymore. And all hell has broken loose. Chaos has trumped Jesus Christ in our world, right? And it's not Trump's fault, but we can't close an eye to it either. We can't. My mother used to talk about that. There is a conditioning process. Don't get used to it. Don't get conditioned to accept it. Don't act as though it's normal, because that's what happens. After a while, you're tolerating the most obscene things. Even a few years ago, you would have considered the height of obscenity, and now you just get used to it. Nah, everybody's going along with it. And that's what I mean so many times on this show. Don't become them. That's why we got to be so careful. Don't become them, right? We need to publicly, friends, what are you going to do about it? Well, we start with publicly acknowledging that Jesus Christ, not Donald Trump, not any other politician, Jesus Christ is the Salvator Mundi, okay? He is the Savior of the world, and we cannot be saved without him. This country cannot be saved without turning back to Jesus Christ. A secular state that pays only lip service at best to God is doomed. Which is why, by the way, I mentioned St. Pius X. This is a show dedicated to Pius X, I guess. But St. Pope Pius X, again, way back in 1906, issued an encyclical in which he said something that today sounds like just a crazy, absurd heresy, you know, against the whole Americanist outlook, right, on the state. He said, Pope St. Pius X said, that the state must be separated from the church is a thesis absolutely false, a most pernicious error. Horror, horrors, right? Because the American mind thinks the separation of church and state is fantastic. But see, St. Pius X wasn't a medieval guy. He was a modern pope living in the modern world, born in the last century. Yeah, but it wasn't that long ago, right? And he was also, by the way, a legitimate saint.
The streets of Rome are again the scene of one of the Catholic Church's greatest ceremonies as the body of Pope Pius X, now St. Pius, is borne in its glass casket through the throngs of reverent onlookers. More than 400,000 are gathered in the Piazza San Pietro for the ritual, which elevates the first pope in 242 years to the ranks of the saints.
So there you have, in my opinion, the greatest pope of the 20th century, a canonized saint, just 130 years after the Declaration of Independence, right, warning the world where this trajectory was going, the trajectory that which has ended up where we are today, right, that without a sound foundation in Christian morality, Christian ethics, right, natural law, the state will fall into chaos. And that's where we are. And there's no way you can stop that without returning to the moral law of Christianity, of God, of nature. You see? You have seen the sanctity of the inviolability of Christian marriage outraged by legislative acts. Pius X reminded the French bishops in the same encyclical, 1906. The encyclical's name is Vium Inter Nos, okay? Talking about marriage. They dismantled it on purpose. Why? Because the family is the nucleus of society. So the first thing the Freemasons did, the first thing the Enlightenment did was begin to chip away at that, of course. And Pius X goes on in Vium Inter Nos. He says, you have seen the schools and hospitals laicized. The law ordaining public prayers at the beginning of each parliamentary session has been abolished. The religious character effaced from the judicial oath. All actions and emblems of the Catholic religion banished from the courts, banished from the schools, banished from the army, banished from the navy, and from all public establishments, says Pope Saint Pius X, giving us the foundation, the Freemasonic, secularist, Enlightenment principle foundations for what's happening today. And this was 120 years ago, that's it. The war on God, the war on Christ was already raging. It was a war on family. It was a war on Christian marriage, on Christian morality.
And on the social kingship of Jesus Christ.
On the social kingship of Jesus Christ. That's what he's talking about. He's talking about the dismantling of the social kingship of Jesus Christ. Nobody listened to him at that point because the modernists were already, as he pointed out in Pashendi a few years before, they were already embedded at the heart and bosom of the church to come out, their coming out party being the Second Vatican Council, right? And so today now, we've gotten used to all that, a divorce, contraception, who cares? We're voting for guys that are totally in favor of IVF and contraception and abortion. It doesn't matter. I'm not saying you cannot vote for them, but don't you think it's going to have some effect on us eventually? Don't you think that's what we need to guard against when we say don't become them? Even in our own First Amendment, the Establishment Clause, what is it saying? Congress shall favor no religion. Okay, I understand what you're going to say. Well, that's in our system. It's better. That way the church can survive, you know, in a state like ours. Okay, but think about the ramifications to us. We're defending, militantly defending, a Freemasonic idea, freedom of religion, right? Which says that no religion, including the religion established by our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, no religion shall enjoy supremacy. No religion is better than another. This is the poison of the Enlightenment that has gotten into our life stream, our bloodstream. This is why we are so threatened, we're so in danger right now of becoming them. Because we're actually fighting for things, as Pius X pointed out, that a mere 100 years ago were considered poisons of Freemasonry. Dismantling the church, dismantling the kingship of Jesus Christ. That's what was going on. And now we're just celebrating it. Because maybe we won't have to go through persecution at the hands of Democrats who are even worse. You see the danger? I'm not saying you can't do it, but you have to go in with your eyes wide open to the pitfalls, right? Because now, Pius was talking about the destruction of Christian marriage. You never probably even thought about abominations such as gay marriage, which in our day are approved even by the guys that we hail as opponents of the deep state.
Donald is the first president to enter the White House supporting gay marriage.
Again, I'm not saying I expect much more out of somebody like Donald Trump, but I expect more out of the popes, the bishops, the priests. I expect more out of us who know better, right? We need to at least understand that this abomination is where separation of church and state, that's where it took us. That's the cul-de-sac where it ended. There's no way out of here now. It ended in total disregard, social, civilizational disregard for the laws of God and nature. And yet even still, today, how many traditional Catholics even believe that St. Pius X was right in 1906 when he said that the separation of the church and state is a pernicious error? How many? 5%? 3%? Have we all become de facto Freemasons now? Is this how far we've fallen from any understanding of God's law? See, I'm not really talking about electoral politics. I'm not talking about a strategy for you on politically. What are we going to do next? I'm talking about how it is that we keep what's going on in here, Catholic, what's here, keep it what's ours as Catholics, as part of our Catholic identity. How do we keep that focus? How do we keep that identity no matter what? Because that's much more important than a mere political strategy involving secular states and goofy politicians. Because when you look at this, when all of a sudden abortion at some level is fine, gay marriage, yeah, whatever, everybody's doing it. A lot of conservative guys are married now to another dude. You realize how close we are to becoming them, to really having no principled, fundamental problem, moral problem with what passes for conservatism now, you see? And the problem is, if we're to understand the civilizational threat that we face today, that our children face, everybody's talking about, man, we're losing our kids, losing the next generation. Well, it's because we're not having this conversation. We're becoming them, and our kids are picking up on it. Okay, I'll go do something else then, make a bunch of money, and not fight for the kingship of Jesus Christ, because nobody else seems to be. We can't let that happen. We need to understand what they did to Christianity, what they did to Christ, what they did to the mystical body of Christ, this revolution, what it did. And you don't have to go back to the 13th century. You don't have to go back to the year 1000. Just go back to the early 20th century and look at what men like Pope St. Pius X were saying, how they were warning us, how they were preparing us for what was going to happen. And stop being in denial. Because what they did to Christ, what they did to the mystical body of Christ, what they did to Christianity was they imprisoned it, they crucified it, they buried it alive. And if we're going to survive somehow, we're going to eke out a salvation, we're going to somehow scratch out our salvation and survive their Christophobic New World Order. We cannot become one of them. We need to come out from among them, as St. Paul said. We need to be separate, which means, friends, that sometimes, maybe sometime in the very near future, it might not be possible for us to join some political party. Maybe it won't be possible for us to vote, as Bishop Schneider was saying. In the Soviet Union, his parents didn't vote. They were all godless communists. Good cop, bad cop, whatever. They were all the same. Maybe we're not there yet in this country, but we need to be open to the fact that that might happen to us, and that keeping the faith is more important. Staying Catholic is more important. And we may not live to see this Catholic king that God will rise up, the saint, or even the president proclaim the kingship of Jesus Christ to the world as Pius XI, a little after Pius X, said is the only way to find peace in this world. Pax Christi is to proclaim the social kingship of Jesus Christ to all nations, he said. We may not live to see the king or the president or the leader do that. He will someday when God raises him up. But in the meantime, we have to make sure that that proclamation is something for which we're ready to lay down our lives. And our children need to see that we're ready to lay down our lives for it, that it matters. You see? Because we're in the catacombs, friends. We're like the early Christians. It's up to us now. That's why we're here. God didn't put us here in this time to be good little Republicans or good little conservatives. God put us here to become saints, to become soldiers of Jesus Christ, to practice the holy religion, even when everyone else has abandoned it, to uphold the Christian moral code, even when everyone else mocks it, to defend the rights of God, even when the whole world says God is dead. God help us, friends. That's what we need to do. That's what we must do until the church rises from the ashes of their truly satanic New World Order.